You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
There's a good chance that you heard Frank DeFord's thoughts on today's morning edition about how Lou Piniella's temper may have turned the Cubs season around. Of course, Mr. DeFord's career encompasses a lot more than weekly commentary on NPR. He's a senior contributing editor at Sports Illustrated, correspondent on the HBO show Real Sports with Brian Gumbel. He's been elected to the Hall of Fame of the National Association of Sportscasters and Sports Writers, been named National Sports Writer of the Year 6 times, and he's also gotten an Emmy and a Peabody. And as regular listeners to this show know, he's also been a novelist. His latest, published by Sourcebooks, is called The Entitled. I'm very happy it has brought Frank DeFord back to my show. Hello.
I'm delighted to be back, Leonard. Thank you.
And the novel's main character, Howie Traveler, seems to be aptly named. He spent 2 decades in the minors as a coach and manager. Now he's managing a team in the majors. It keeps him on the road all the time. Now, I understand the significance of naming him Traveler, but why have you saddled him with being the manager of the Cleveland Indians?
You really want to know the story?
Sure.
It's a good story. When I got the idea for this novel, it was 2004. I was working on a movie at the time, so it was just in the back of my mind.
I forgot to mention screenwriter.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway, so I picked. I wanted a team that had lost a lot, right? Because Howie wouldn't get a chance with a real winner. I picked the Boston Red Sox. Okay, the Red Sox win in 2004, as we all know. So I had to pick a new team. Honest to God, I picked the Chicago White Sox.
And of course, but Cleveland is doing well now, too.
So Cleveland. Well, when I was in Cleveland promoting the book, and I told people this, and I said, it's guaranteed that you win the pennant this year, I was greeted with hosannas. But that's why I picked Cleveland, because they haven't won a pennant since 1948.
Texas Rangers probably would have been a sure
bet.
Oh,
yeah, but there's no fun. I wanted an old Eastern city.
You're right. The better Howie got at managing a baseball team, the more he shied away from trying to manage his family, because that was harder and because that wasn't fun or satisfying the way baseball could be. But is it fun? I mean, you got 25 men of different ages and backgrounds, talent levels, personalities on a team. Is a baseball team a family on some level?
Oh, I don't think it's a family, no. And I sort of resent that when people use that term, we are a family.
Pittsburgh Pirates did.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is, though, that for Howie, it was more fun than dealing with his own family and the problems that came there. And so many of these guys who are transient, who are baseball gypsies, their families do break up. I mean, it's just impossible to hold them together. The children grow up and they don't see them that much. And Howie Traveler is a classic example of that.
And he's like a lot of managers we've seen in baseball. The superstars sometimes make good managers, but more often than not, the great managers are the guys who probably never made it to the majors, or just in Howie's case, he had a lifetime 0.91 batting average because he got one hit in the majors. But spent years and years in minor league teams, never getting above AAA.
It's very rare that in any sport that the good players move to the top and become managers. Joe Torre is probably as good a player right now as has ever been made a manager. And, of course,
Frank Robinson was a pretty good manager.
Who?
Frank Robinson?
Oh, Robinson was. I mean, there are some. Ted Williams even managed for a while. But by and large, it's the guys who weren't very good at it, but who watch because they're not very good. If it all comes so easy to you, you don't understand how it is that other people can't do it. You can't teach them because it just was so natural to you. And Howie, though, is a teacher. The best managers and coaches in any sport are teachers.
And you don't endure that kind of career unless you really love the game. What does he love so much about the game? He says that the game is about what's not happening.
Well, I think that's what makes baseball such an intriguing sport. Who do you bring into the game? What's going on behind the scenes? I think that's why it's a more difficult game for people who, say, come from outside of this country to understand. The back-and-forth sports, whether they're soccer, football, basketball, hockey, whatever, are so much easier to pick up, at least immediately. You're just trying to go from one end to the other. And baseball is much more complicated and, I think, more intellectual. Now, the one thing I didn't want to do, though, Leonard, I did not want to get into the rhapsody of baseball, which so many writers do. I was at determined not to do that. It is, after all, just a sport. It's not poetry.
You mean the satori of the pitcher and the catcher and the batter?
And the changing seasons. It begins in the spring, you know, all that nonsense. No.
Well, and Howie finally gets his chance to manage a major league team. Managing turns out to be a lot more than just knowing the game. He can spot a small flaw in a batter's swing, but there's all this other stuff. And right now, older guys managing young people who have very different attitudes about the world, it's changed the game a lot, hasn't it?
I think the hardest thing for a manager of whatever age is knowing how to treat different people on the team differently, but pretend on the outside that you're treating everybody the same. And that sounds like a contradiction, and indeed it is a contradiction, but the best managers manage to pull this off, because the idea that you treat everybody the same, you can't run any kind of a sports team that way, and Howie is very good at that. You got to kick some guys, and you got to pat some on the back, and it is difficult now for managers, because the players make so much money, and it used to be it wasn't fair, but it was the reality that they were stuck with one team; they couldn't leave. So you had to sort of accept the manager. Now it's not true at all. He knows, for example, that his great star Jay Alcazar can pull out and leave the team.
And this is really as much about old school meeting the modern game as anything. Mm-hmm. Jay Alcazar, who has enormous talent, he's been called the best player in the game, but one teammate describes him as someone who doesn't know who he is. And he has a number of different identities.
I wanted the main central character, and he is the title character. He is the entitled, as so many ballplayers in all sports think they are today. I wanted him to be interesting, Leonard. If I had made him just a dumb jock, no one would have cared. And it's also important that you like him, because, and I'm not giving anything away, in the very first chapter, he's accused of rape in a hotel room. And if you don't like the guy, you're not going to believe him when he says that he doesn't do it. And a lot of the book is keeping that tension in the forefront. He's an interesting guy.
Although fans sometimes are rabid enough so that they, even if they don't like a guy, they will defend him. That's what happened with Kobe Bryant, who was not the most popular player in Los Angeles, but people were swearing that he was innocent even though they weren't in the hotel room.
Fans are different from readers. I've got to keep people interested in the book, but you are absolutely right. And we're seeing it right now with Barry Bonds, who may be the most churlish athlete that I've ever encountered in my many years. But the people in San Francisco, which is supposed to be such a sophisticated city, are like yahoos with this guy. They adore him, they cheer him, and they forgive him everything, even as though he's despised everywhere else. You put a uniform on someone that has the name of your city or your college across the chest, and all is forgiven. That's the reality.
My guest is Frank DeFord. His latest book, his second novel, is it? Is the entitled A Tale of Modern Baseball, and it is published by Source Books. Alcazar insists that he's innocent, but his manager, Howie, witnessed a troubling scene on the night of the alleged rape. I'm not going to go much further because we don't want to give away the whole story, but this is also about a manager who wants to continue managing.
Yes.
His superstar is the only way he's ever going to win.
Yes.
Or is one of the main tickets.
Yes.
And he has to make a decision. Does he tell what he's seen or does he not?
And if he tells what he's seen, it wouldn't altogether indict Alcazar, but it would certainly throw the weight of evidence against him. It's somewhat ambiguous what he's seen, but it's enough that if he reveals this, it's first of all, he knows that Alcazar is going to desert him then. He's finished as a manager, and being an old busher, he's probably never going to get another chance. It's not like he's a Joe Torre who's established himself as a major leaguer and got three chances to manage in the big leagues. You get that one shot as a busher, and that's it. So it's a real dilemma for Howie, an ethical dilemma, if you will. Does he tell what he saw and essentially give up his life as a manager, or does he swallow it and have to realize that he's not a full man?
The late David Halberstam, who loved baseball but also knew about a lot of other things, he saw Howie as being a kind of a Willie Loman type and wanted readers to look at this book as something more than a baseball book.
Yeah, I remember when David told me that after he read the book, and I must say I had not thought about it before. I think Howie is a little more successful than Willie Loman, but by the same token, it's sunshine and the smile.
But he's one of these guys who probably had, even though he had a family, he didn't spend a lot of time with them because he was always away 2 months at most back home, has affairs,
relationships. Like Willie Loman.
Then, as he gets older, he starts showing up at the ballpark earlier and earlier. For night games, he shows up at 10 a.m. because he has nothing else to do. And we've seen a lot of guys like that.
As a matter of fact, the most interesting character right now is the new manager of the Orioles, a guy I've never heard of before called Dave Tremblay. This guy never even played in the minor leagues, never mind the major leagues.
He sounds like he played hockey.
I don't know where he came from, but he's been in the minors for 20, 25 years, and they fired the manager, and they gave him the team, calling him an interim manager, tried desperately to hire somebody else, Joe Girardi, the old Yankee. He turned him down, and now he's been very successful. And maybe he's going to end up as Howie Traveler with his one chance. So these guys exist all over. Bill Belichick, who's the resident genius of the NFL, coaching the Patriots. He was a bad player on a Division III team at Wesleyan. And so it's a group that's been around for a long, long time.
Eric Mangini of the Jets, the same sort of story.
Yes.
But baseball is different. First of all, the players tend to be older when they make it to the big leagues. Many of them have been through college. But also now we see this weird thing where there are fewer black players, a lot of players who do not speak English, who speak either Spanish or Japanese or Mandarin or anything other. Well, you know, starting to see people from Taiwan and we're not or Korea. And it's I don't know whether handling fame is the same for them as it is for some kid who becomes a basketball star out of high school.
Once I decided to make this a baseball story, and I mean, the sense of entitlement is there in basketball and football. If anything, it comes a little earlier because fame comes to football and basketball players at a younger age. But once I decided to make it a baseball story, I knew that the superstar had to be a Latin. I mean, it just, that's the reality now, superstars.
A Cuban in this case.
And originally I had him as a Dominican, and then I understood if I had, where most of them are from, but if I had him as that, he was going to be speaking in broken English the whole way through the book. I mean, it wasn't his fault. But once again, he was going to sound stupid, and I couldn't have that. And so then I made him a Dominican-American, and then I changed it and made him a Cuban-American because that added so much to the story. I could take him back into his life in Cuba before, and that really changed it from a novelette to a novel. It was interesting, Leonard, in talking to some managers before I wrote the book, they said something I had never realized before, that us looking in from the outside seemed to lump, to stereotype all Latins. He said, no. The difference between, say, Puerto Ricans and Dominicans and Mexicans is considerable in the same way that Swedes and French and Italians are different. And you have to know how to treat them differently. And I've also given Howie an ability to speak Spanish, which is very vital today for a baseball manager.
Is baseball a sport that's easy to write about? Now I'm talking about not just in a novel, but in general.
I think it is because there's the team game, but there's always the individual subset, the drama between the pitcher and the hitter. At any one moment, it's an individual sport wrapped in a team game. And so that does make it easier. I can send Jay Alcazar to bat, and it's all very discreet. It's all very limited. He's up there against this pitcher, and he's doing, and there's a man on second, and the infield's, it's all very clean. And I think that does make it easier to write about. And I think it's also, baseball is the most aural of games. It's sort of the last cracker barrel in which listening to a baseball game is so different than listening to a basketball or football game. It's telling stories. And so I think that makes it a better sport to write about.
You said in a recent column that sport is unique among all forms of entertainment because In sports, fans still gravitate towards excellence. Will fans be turned off as we see more and more of these stories about scandals and betting officials and players bankrolling dogfights?
All of the talk about steroids, and I'm going to qualify this a little bit. Baseball is now more successful than it's ever been in its entire history. Where people get turned off more is with individual sports, because you don't have the loyalty. If you're a Yankee fan or a Met fan, it's almost in your DNA, and it doesn't make any difference. But if you're following...
And
say,
I even root for players who say really stupid things about politics and other things
there
in
you
the
go.
Newspapers. I forgive them you when
forgive
they're up
them.
At bat and they hit that home run that wins the game.
As long as they've got that New York across the chest here, then it's okay. It's a little harder for individual sports because you don't have that loyalty, which is why track and field and cycling have taken such a hit. But by and large... even with dogfighting, this too will pass, and I guarantee you that the people in Atlanta and everywhere else will be turning out in droves this year to watch a lot of football players who've done a lot of dreadful things.
Frank DeFord's latest book, a novel, is about ball players sometimes not doing the right thing. He has called it The Entitled, The Tale of Modern Baseball, and it is published by Sourcebooks. I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
It's been a delight. Thank you.
Do you have a hard time saying you're sorry? Well, up next, Bruce Weinstein, the ethics guy from businessweek.com, takes your calls on giving and receiving apologies. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We're also heard on satellite.